All right, you're live on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Whee! Contest. Patrons, what the hell?
Yeah, get in on this.
I don't understand our contest situation that we have going on. Like, sometimes we'll get 20 or 30 or more entries. And for this contest, we have one.
Granted, it probably would have won anyways.
I think it's probably a winner anyway. But, yeah. I mean, look, people still have until midnight tonight to enter into the Arms Room freaking contest. All right. You're going to win a Riker Nylon Gear AFAC fully stocked by Riker Nylon Gear.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, 100, 150 bucks or something worth of stuff.
Something like that.
And this contest was Mike from Riker, his idea, which was John and I debating due process.
As our spirit animals.
As our spirit animals. And much to my chagrin, we have no entries with me as a great white shark or a saber-toothed tiger and John as a sloth or a hot pocket.
Wait, so,
what? What? It's a meat field hot pocket. It's like the pepperoni pizza one.
God, I haven't had one of those in so long,
it's been a
dude.
Long time.
Ugh.
There's a reason you haven't.
Yeah. Maybe right. For lunch, I'm going to take you guys out to a nice course of hot pockets. All right.
Looks like we're going to Circle K.
We're going to Circle K.
Real nice
so,
lunch.
You have until midnight tonight to enter, and there's only one entry, so I mean...
Get in there.
Your chances of winning are pretty good if you do an okay job.
50-50, yeah,
50-50. Yeah, 50-50, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, thank you to all of our patrons for being patrons, for supporting us and what we do. And if you're listening right now, we're still testing our new microphone. So if there's any weird issues or something with it, please let us know because we're still trying to make sure everything goes well with it. And so, yeah, just let us know if there's any problems.
Seems very Men in Black. I don't know why.
It is very futuristic.
Yeah.
Whatever. So show ideas. If you guys have show ideas as patrons, we're currently collecting those for our next calendar. We've already got a bunch of them. We posted up on Patreon and Instagram and all that about you guys sending us your show ideas. So you've already sent us a bunch. But we have more. We have room for more. So please, if you have some show ideas, someone you want to see on as a guest, a topic you want to hear us discuss, whatever it may be, shoot those over to us either via Patreon, Instagram, Facebook, or, of course, our email info@trainingaz.com. Remember to check out the blogs and show reviews that you guys are getting for your patronage. They're right there on the Patreon page. All right. Have some things, unfortunately, to talk about before we get started with everything else. And apologize, I have to look up something real quick so I get the right information down. Crap. Paul Rutherford, police officer right here in Phoenix, got killed in a Maryvale police – it wasn't really a police incident. He was actually responding to, I think, a vehicle accident and then on foot went to respond to another incident that was close by and got struck and killed by a vehicle.
That's
a shit way to go out, man.
Yeah, man.
You know, so that's really unfortunate, but our condolences to Officer Rutherford's family.
Absolutely. And the driver's cooperating, wasn't intoxicated, just a shitty situation.
Just one of those things, man. I don't know the context of it. Was a guy texting? Was he not looking? Did he freaking look down for a half a second and look up? I mean, who knows, right? I wasn't there. So I'm not gonna throw that person under the bus until any more information comes out, if it ever comes out. But if he's cooperating and everything, that's all good. That's good stuff. Lost a few guys over the last couple weeks. Starting first class Carpenter out of 175.
He was attached to 75th, but he was originally from 175. Yeah. Yes.
So he parachute related incident during the free fall school, which happens right here in Arizona. So that is very unfortunate.
That sucks.
Always sucks, man, when you have guys who have so much experience and so much knowledge and you really don't want – you need them to be alive for future engagements and they die over a freaking parachute accident. I mean something actually Ryan and I were talking about this weekend about really what is the necessity of us still continuing to push airborne and free fall qualifications for everybody and not just organizations that are actively involved in doing it. They probably have a higher rate of death, I think, in those situations from training perspective than actual combat-related incidents. When you look at how many times these guys have jumped in a training environment versus how many times they've actually been in combat, they've been in combat a lot and they've managed to survive, and they've only jumped at a handful of times or a dozen times. Even if it's 100 times, they've probably been in combat more than that.
Yeah, Ethan Carpenter, they deployed, I think it was 9 times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something really unique about Ethan was he would carry a SEMrest sword on target.
Really?
Yeah. There's a on Facebook, there's a picture floating around of him with his SEMrest sword. It's pretty cool.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. Yeah. Personal note from Ryan, for those of you guys who didn't know, 175 is Ryan's alma mater, where he went to school, learned how to be a man.
Yeah.
So,
10 good years.
Starting first class, Will Lindsay, out of second Battalion 10th Group, and Specialist Joseph Collette, out of 242nd Ordnance Battalion 71st EOD Group, both out of Fort Carson. Were killed this past weekend. Doesn't really say a lot about the circumstances of their death, but they died sustained while engaged in combat operations is all that they said. So they are the third and fourth service members killed in Afghanistan this year.
Sucks.
So. Yeah. By the way, everybody, so you'd know, we are still engaged in Afghanistan.
Wait, what?
If only we had known way back then that we were still going to be engaged now. Oh, heaven forbid.
Ridiculous.
I don't want my kids to fight this war, man.
No.
But it's going to happen, I think.
It's possible.
I don't know why. I don't even know why, but that's a whole other show, I suppose.
I went there 6 times, and every single time was just about the same.
Hey, look, still a shithole.
Yeah. No change. Oh, I'm a little more angry, maybe that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm trying to contain a rant. All right. It just like, takes concentrated effort for me to contain a rant about Afghanistan. field carbine class this past weekend. Such a phenomenal freaking class, man. I love teaching the field carbine class. Really gets people to stretch their guns way out. Anyway, guys hitting 400 yards and beyond with red dots and low power variables and short barrel guns and field shooting positions. Tons of fun. I just love teaching the class. It's really fun to watch people, sometimes struggle to get a group together at 100 yards. And then from a, kneeling supported position off of a, trekking pole, mm-hmm. nail some freaking, 10-inch gong at 300 or something. So a lot of fun to have that class. And this is actually talking to an associate of ours this morning, kicking around some ideas of being able to move or add a moving target system to that program. That would make that class even better than it already is. So, and we definitely have a slot that we can slide a moving target presentation in there. So,
sure.
So we're working on that actually. He contacted me after this weekend, another associate instructor of ours, and was like, "Hey man, I saw you guys taught that class. What do you think about adding this kind of program?" And I was like, "Ah, yes." Nice. Last week also taught another carbine class, the Ladies 101 class, which is also another fun class to teach. You get a lot of ladies out there. A lot of them don't really have a lot of experience with the guns. Or their husbands have built them for them, or their boyfriend or their friend or their cousin who is a Marine or whatever has put this freaking gun together, and sometimes
it doesn't work.
We had two of the ladies who literally will absolutely alter and or sell their guns,
yep.
and get something entirely new because of just how ridiculous their guns were put together.
Yeah, one looked like it was shooting fucking dragon's breath out of a shotgun.
Yeah.
And the other one just was too large and heavy for her frame.
It was huge. She was a relatively small frame gal, and she really wanted to do the program, and it was just this huge freaking gun, and she just could not even hold it up. She couldn't manage
it. Musket size 20.
No, it was actually a relatively short gun. She was a very very short lady with very very short arms, and it was very difficult for her to just hold up this particular gun. And again, it just goes back to the idea of man, when you're selecting a firearm, you cannot select firearms for other people.
No.
You have whoever's going to be shooting the firearm has to be able to select their own firearm. You cannot select a firearm for them. It's just not the way it works. I had a great opportunity this last week to go to the Phoenix Rock Gym, which was a climbing gym I have not been to previously here in Arizona. If you're in the Phoenix area and you want a really cool gym to go climb at, I'd always climb to AZ on the Rocks over in Scottsdale, which I like. But the Phoenix Rock Gym, freaking cool. Really cool. The only downside to them is they don't have any auto belayers. So at AZ on the Rocks, you have auto belayer, so you can do a, you can climb your, on your own. You don't have to have a belayer there, so you can go by yourself and climb and then auto belay down. But Phoenix Rock Gym, no auto belayer, so you have to have someone there to belay with you. But I like their routes more. Yeah, they had some good routes, and just kind of a cool atmosphere too. I really liked it. I would recommend either gym, honestly. But
I'd be climbing the kids' routes at this point. It's been so long since I went climbing, dude.
Dude, I tell you what, I'm so proud of my kids. They go there. They're incredible, man. You know, even my youngest at five is just screaming up some of these routes.
Yeah,
and my oldest daughter is incredible, man. She's like, let's do this one, and it's some like crazy, you know, like 512 and an overhang, and she just kills it, man. You know, she'll get up there up underneath the overhang. She's got these badass freaking underhooks. She crawls up there, freaking, she'll like grab a point with her knees, reach over the top, swing out, pull herself. I'm like, God, you're like a pro, dude. I can't even do that,
man.
You know, and then my son, you know, my oldest son's there, and he's like, yeah, well, you know, he yells up to me, yeah, try slinging like 130 pounds. I'm like, try slinging like 180 pounds, guy. You know what I mean? Like, but it was a lot of fun. And I'm just really proud of them and how well they climb and how they are always challenging themselves. You know, I like to see that. All of them challenged themselves that day while we were there climbing. We were there for several hours. And it was a really, really cool opportunity. As always, my kids like to climb, and it's fun to go watch them. So if you have a chance to go to the Phoenix Rock Gym, it's a cool place that I recommend. I hadn't heard of it before that day. We always went to AZ on the Rocks, so there you go. IFAT class upcoming. I mentioned that because of the topic of discussion we're going to have today. Mm-hmm. This Saturday is the IFAT class coming up in Mesa. So if you're listening, you get a Patreon or a patron discount. You know, if you're a refresher, you get a refresher discount. If you're a military or law enforcement service member, previous or current, you get a discount. There's all kinds of great opportunities to go to the class and take the class. It is our kind of flagship medical class. There's really no reason to not go to it. Even if you already kind of know the information, goes a refresher, if nothing else. So that's coming up the 30th.
We'll go to see if things have changed, because oddly enough, things change.
Information gets updated, man. Absolutely, 100%. So Redwire gear moment, go.
Be selective about the equipment and tools you purchase. And that's not necessarily just talking about guns and knives and things like that. That everything that you purchase in your life. Be selective. Don't buy into marketing hype. And do your own due diligence on stuff. If you're looking at a kit, go and talk to some people. Look at the online reviews. I mean, there's no reason to buy garbage this day and age. Right? My wife, when she goes to buy anything, she will spend a week doing nothing but research on two or three different ones. Once she decides which one, you know, what she wants, she'll look at two or three different versions, read all of the reviews, and then make a decision. So don't buy into it. Be selective.
All right. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by RedwireGear.com. And right on time and punctual, Kevin from Prepared Medical called me right now, so I'm going to get him on the phone here. Hey, Kevin, how you doing, man?
Good. What's up?
You are so punctual, dude. You were like literally exactly on time.
Well, it was literally going to be exactly on time in 10 minutes.
We were literally late, so.
Story so of our life.
Waiting 10 minutes.
So how you doing, man?
Good. How's it going?
Very, very good. So we want to kind of get caught up with where you are professionally, because the last time we talked to you, it had... I know you were working, you could kind of build up your training program, but you're still working professionally as an EMT. So kind of tell us where you're at now.
Yeah. So I'm still doing all those things. If you got noise in the background, I'm sorry, it's raining outside extremely hard all of a sudden.
No, it's all right.
So I'm still training. The company's kind of taking a different direction. I was doing a lot of open enrollment courses, just kind of advertising online, inviting civilians to take some kind of point of injury care, first responder type trauma courses. But then a lot of organizations have been reaching out saying, hey, you teach TACMED, you teach TECC, you teach Street School C. And so I've been filled up with a lot of contract work, teaching law enforcement, fire departments, some government, some corporations. So most of my time now is kind of spent working or teaching for other groups, which is kind of nice for me. I don't have to advertise. I don't spend a lot of money and time looking for students or looking for clients. They just kind of come to me and they set up, you know, a place for me to teach, and they bring me in and have me teach. So I get some good kind of varied students that way. I did make a move, so I'm in the process of now making a move from Middle Tennessee to the Memphis area, which nobody usually moves to Memphis. We were away from Memphis, but
yeah.
Family obligations kind of brought us there, so I took a new job, still with the fire department over there near Memphis, and that brings me actually closer out to a company that you may be familiar with, Tees, which is Tactical Energetic Entry Systems.
Yeah.
Do a ton of breaching courses. So they are branching out, trying to do some TACNED courses. So I've come in line with them doing some of that for them. So that brings me out right in their backyard. So that's good for me in that regard. So I hope to see some more work from them on the TACNED side, both for law enforcement and military breachers coming through, doing some first response for breachers, types of things they might see, and then just dealing with their SWAT programs and things like that. So, but outside of that, yeah, I've just really been learning kind of the last probably 6 or 12 months. I've really just been absorbing a lot of the new things that are going on in the industry. There's a lot of different things, new things that are out that people are having a hard time with. And so I've been studying and learning things so I can argue with people on Facebook about them.
Perfect, man. Well, it sounds like you're making some good moves, dude. I like to hear that.
Yeah, you know, it's a small community, but it feels like a big community. The TACMED or just pre-hospital medicine in general, you kind of run into a lot of the same people. So once people start to know your name, they start to throw it out there. Next thing you know, you like, hey, I know you through this person. Why don't you come teach here and this and that? So yeah, it's as busy as I want it to be. I'm still working full time for a fire department that pays the bills, that gives me insurance. But if I wanted to be busier teaching, I could be. But no, it's good. I can be a little bit pickier about who I teach and the type of clients I reach out to. So it's good.
Nice. Well, let's jump right in the mud, dude. Tell me about your most hated medical product. Like, what's the thing that gets pushed publicly that you see, you know, speaking of arguing with people on Facebook, what's the kind of thing that that gets pushed publicly that every time you just grit your teeth and cringe?
I'm going to go. So it faded away for a while, but now it's back, and it's the rat's turn.
Oh, man, I knew you were going to say that. Golf club.
It went away, and people, we made progress. All the medicine came out, the research came out, people were starting to listen. We got rid of a lot of fanboys. But just the last 2 weeks, this guy's come back, and he's literally trying to discredit the cat tourniquet. He's putting out websites, trying to hide his name, and putting out some cherry-picked BS research on the cat, saying the cat's not effective, it's been proven not effective, this and that. So he's trying to, in a roundabout way, discredit a very credible product. So not only is the rat's tourniquet completely ineffective piece of equipment for medicine, but now the guy that invented it is trying to promote it via discrediting good products.
Yeah.
So the ethics of that company, the ethics of that guy are just, they're out the door. So not only would I not buy it because it doesn't work, but even if it worked, I wouldn't buy it because he's a piece of crap. And if that's how he's going to operate his business, then I wouldn't give him the money anyway. So it's back. So people are like, I don't understand why you're hating on the rats. I read this website called evidencebasedmedicine.com is the name of the website.
Yeah. Well, he's got another one called, isn't the other one called like cattourniquet.com or something like that?
Yeah. So when people start to research tourniquets and they pop up on cat or they're looking for evidence-based medicine, this crap comes up and it's just, I don't have to defend it. The cat doesn't need me to defend it. It's been out there for so long and it's proven effective, but just give it a break, bro. Your product doesn't work. Focus on something that does. Give it a rest. You don't have to try to. Everybody's on to you. That's all I have to say. Everybody knows you're a turd. Just give it up. But yeah, the rat tourniquet, it's definitely. People still put it out there. People still want to argue with me, and that just. It's frustrating because the goal of the program, the goal of this whole initiative, Stop the Bleed, TCCC, the main goal is zero preventable deaths. If you are using or promoting a rat's tourniquet, you are not contributing to that end goal. And there's better options out there. There's tons of better options out there. And they're just as accessible. They're just as easy to carry. It's probably weekly. Some days I sit around and I I feel like I want to fight, I'll just hop on there and start surfing Instagram or Facebook for the RAS tourniquet, and inevitably there's somebody on there that wants to argue with you. And so I can, you know, if I'm feeling froggy one day, I may pick a fight. If not, I just kind of let it ride. But there are plenty of other guys out there to fight that battle too. So,
well, you know what's interesting is when the thing first came out, it was a piece of shit. The guy lied about it. You know, there was a bunch of groups who pushed it, Ready Man and all these other guys. And unfortunately, a lot of these guys started throwing out, you know, special operations backgrounds and medical backgrounds and stuff like that. And so a lot of people just jumped on board with it and they were like, oh, hey, that's cool. You guys have the, you know, sufficient experience or pedigree is really more important. Not the experience, but they had the pedigree, the resume, so to speak, to say, oh, yeah, this is an effective product. And, you know, a lot of guys, when they get out of the military, just looking for a way to make a dollar because they're trying to support their family like anybody else. And so then they're just like, oh, yeah, I'll throw my name behind that, bro, if you want to push this tourniquet. I mean, hey, what's the worst that could happen? You know, because originally they had created that TCCC company and then said the RATS was TCCC approved. As soon as they did that, I was out. Yeah. I was just like, yeah, I don't. Your product already is a piece of shit, and then the fact that you lied about it just makes me just not even like you. So, you know, for years, it's always been my number one pet peeve and something that I hate against very vocally and very publicly. Which isn't there's not a lot of things that I just will just pick apart and just not let go. But the RATS tourniquet has definitely been that thing I won't let go. And you have all these guys out there pushing it, and I've always over the years since the stupid things even existed. Been like, dude, if you push it, I just don't respect you. If you think it's a good product, I don't respect you. If you're selling it in your kits, I don't respect you. If you've convinced a student to buy it, I don't respect you. I don't think that anything you have to say in that regard is valid. You don't understand how this works. You don't understand the medicine behind it. You don't care really about your people. And they're like, well, but it's compact and I can wear it as a belt. And I'm like, these are all stupid reasons to select a tourniquet. And now he's just, I don't know if he got bored with his life or what happened, but he's fired it up even more now, where now everybody really hates him.
So when those sales start to dip off, you gotta find a way to get relevant again.
I guess all publicity is good publicity. Is that the thing we're going for here?
That might be his end goal.
Well, you're right. It's all about the buck. That company, literally, all they want is your money.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about what they're doing or what they're teaching. They just want your money. And these guys, like you said, these guys that push it, that put their name behind it, prior to me finding out, I'm like, oh, those are good dudes. And now I'm like, now you just want the money. So now everything you talk about has the premise that you just want my money. So I'm not going to listen to anything you have to say because I think you're just in it for the buck, which that's cool. You got to support your family. But I don't know. I think you should do better, you know, find a different way instead of putting people in danger. I think it just puts people at risk. So. It's silly, but it definitely gets at me, and I used to be nice about it. I used to say, hey man, you know, why do you carry the RATS? Like, can you tell me, like, let's have a conversation about it and let me try to convince you, you know, why you shouldn't. But now I'm just like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Throw that away. What do you mean I'm an idiot? I'm like, you're an idiot. You need better training. What do you mean I need better training? You can't, who are you to tell me I need better training? Some guy just this last week, how dare you tell me I need better training? I'm a professional EMT, and we carry the cats on the ambulance, but I'm very picky about what I carry for my family. I'm like, so you're telling me that you care about your family, and you use a cat on your job, but you chose a RATS to keep in your kit for your family? So you either need better training, or you just don't care about your family.
Right.
So who are you to tell me that? I'm like, well...
Smarter than you are, that's who I am.
I think is the big thing is, you know, in an era of time where no one can be wrong, you know, the anonymity of the internet and social media and everything has created this whole other breed of asshole that will get online and argue just nonstop, right? Well, then and they would say shit to you. I have a story about how this applies specifically concerning the RATS tourniquet. Where the guy who owned the tourniquet was talking shit to me online, and then I met him at SHOT Show, and I said, what now? Will you say that same shit you said to me online to my face? And of course he wouldn't, you know?
No.
And,
no, of course not. It's a whole lot different when somebody's going to punch you in the mouth when you're being a dickhead.
Well, and so then the problem is then it creates this idea in people that they can't be wrong, right? They're right. They thought it. They've decided it. Thus, they're right about it. And so you'll have guys like the guy you were talking to where you're going like, look, man, the RATS is a piece of shit. And here's why. There's no evidence behind it. There's evidence behind these other things. I knew it was a piece of shit when this happened. It very first came out. Our medical distributor had got one as a, you know, T&E or whatever. We were about to teach a medical class there, and there were five of us standing around, right? All of us very experienced medical professionals. And we I pulled it out of the package. I set the instructions down. Shouldn't have to read the instructions to understand how a tourniquet works if the tourniquet is working in accordance with how a tourniquet is supposed to work. I pull it out. It's a strap hooked with this little, you know, metal loop. I put it on incorrectly. I hand it to the next guy. They hand it to the next guy. Hand it to one of our female medics. Hands it over to our medical distributor. All five of us put it on incorrectly. I'm like, look, and when five experienced dirt medicine type folks, we're not doctors or nurses, like when five experienced field medics can't get this thing on right the first time, I'm sorry, it's a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's not worth having.
And that's kind of where it started for me. And then I found out they lied, and then they continued to lie, and then they were making fake videos using pulse oximeters. Come on, man. Pulse oximeter?
I shot my fingernails and did a zero to pulse oximeter. It was real. So, not that I wear fingernail polish every day.
Right.
Some days.
But on those special days.
I still have one of their originals, stamp TCCC approved. I showed my class. For no other reason, I don't buy it because of this. Their ethics are poor.
Yep.
Now I have these websites and all this other bullshit. It's like, you know, it's not worth it. Even if it works, like, you just got to be... I got to choose where I spend my money, and I choose not to give my money to people like that.
Yeah.
So, what people don't realize nowadays with social media, and it's society's taught us this, like you said, we can be assholes online because we don't have to face the facts. But what people don't realize is there are even people who are assholes before the internet. Like, I've been an asshole my whole life.
Right.
So I have no problem arguing with you online or face-to-face. If I know I'm right, then I don't have a problem. It doesn't matter where we're arguing. So, and the first thing I do anytime I get in an argument with somebody on Instagram or Facebook is I click on their profile because I don't know who I'm arguing with. This guy could be somebody that knows something about it. I watch this all the time with people who try to argue with Andrew Fisher.
Right.
Like, what do you know about TCCC? And he's like, well, I'm on the committee for TCCC. Does that help? You know,
yeah.
They're like, well, I mean, click on the profile, people. Like, look at the experience of the people you're arguing with. Don't argue about medicine with people who are experts in medicine. It doesn't take much, and so, but it's a, you know, it's a pastime. My wife doesn't like it when I do it, but I typically do it at work because it gets my blood pressure up and I get fired up, and I can't not say something. If somebody tries to pick around with me, I have to, you know, be midnight. I'm like, I just got to say one more thing.
One more thing, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
So moving on from equipment, what is like the number one medical concept or technique kind of myth out there that just drives you insane? Something that people talk about doing that just drives you bananas?
Well, it changes because medicine changes. And we'll talk about that probably here in a little bit, how things are changing. But the thing that gets me lately is how people are just unable to accept or unwilling to change what they've been taught. And it goes back to probably the same reason they argue about equipment is it's an ego thing. They were taught when they went to school to learn something that something is right. They've invested time and money into a product or a process, and they've made decisions based on that. They've spent money. They've told their friends about it, and now their ego won't let them change their mind. So when things change, like tourniquets weren't always a thing. For a long time, tourniquets weren't a thing. You didn't do that, but science changed. And now tourniquets are a thing, and they're a good thing. So I see a lot of people nowadays telling groups that you don't need to put a tourniquet on an amputated limb. That for some reason, because the limb's been amputated, that it's not going to bleed, and it will physiologically, your body will prevent blood from exiting an amputated limb. And they will fight. They will scream and shout on all caps. That no, it's amputated, you're going to have vasoconstriction and vessel retraction, and it won't bleed, it doesn't need a tourniquet. Or I put a tourniquet on there, but I wouldn't tighten it until I need it. And I guess I don't understand. I'm less angry about that than I am just dumbfounded that you would not put a tourniquet on an amputated limb. So that's one thing that I see that I can't let go, because it seems extremely reckless. What are the risks of you putting a tourniquet on an amputated limb? Are you going to lose the limb? First question, are you worried about losing that limb? Because it's gone. I don't know what you're worried about. So that's the one thing I see now that I don't know where it came from or who taught them that. Maybe they learned that in the 80s when they went to 18 Delta school or something, when they were SEAL Rangers. I don't know. But that's not true. If you have an amputated limb, it needs a tourniquet. It needs a tourniquet right away. Please don't save your tourniquets for somebody else. Put your tourniquet on that person.
I've never heard that.
Oh, yeah, I have. Oh, yeah. Dude, it's big in the online medical forums. There are people, just like Kevin said, that literally will debate it. They will debate it back and forth on, oh, no, you don't. Yeah, because like you said, because of the pressure, of vessel retraction and vessel constriction, that you know, oh, no, that's going to hold pressure. And you're like, okay, let's just assume, and it does happen, right? The problem is that the issue, I think, with most medicine and where people get it is that it's incredibly anecdotal, right? Which is kind of what we're going to get into here in a second, which is evidence-based medicine. But anecdotal-based medicine is like, well, I was a paramedic for 15 years, and I saw a guy get his arm traumatically amputated in a vehicle accident, and it wasn't even bleeding. And it never bled. All the way to the hospital, it didn't even bleed. And look, that's a reality. Like, that's possible due to vessel damage and pressure and constriction and all that kind of stuff. It is possible that when a vessel retracts, it's under enough pressure because of traumatic swelling that it will prevent it from bleeding, maybe all the way until that person gets to the hospital and they have that adrenal flush and the muscles relax and the vessels open up. And then finally it starts bleeding. And maybe it did start bleeding, but well after that paramedic had passed that, passed that that patient off to whoever, right, at the ER or whatever. And so then that person then takes that information and they go like, so that happened. Well, then the problem is now that I've been a paramedic for 15 years, now, a position over at the fire school opens up, and now I'm going to go start teaching, over at the paramedic program. I'm going to go start teaching community college in the EMT program, and I'm going to pass that bullshit anecdotal information along. And then it's just going to get propagated, and the story's going to get enriched, over time. It's going to turn into a big fish story until it wasn't one. It was five different people over my career, and one had been shot, and the other one had his arm ripped off. And it's like there's all these this anecdotal bullshit starts to freaking, pile Snowball. Up as it rolls down the hill until eventually that becomes people's truth, but they have no evidence behind it. It's all anecdotal.
That's where the fucking tampon came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you get tampons in a trauma kit.
Yep.
That's exactly how that happened. Because some guy's like, you know what? That looks like a vagina. You just put a tampon in it. And now we spend hours on the internet arguing people about tampons and trauma kits. Or 18 Delta blood soakers or whatever you want to call them.
Right. The new blood soakers. I love those 18 Delta blood soakers. Those are like my favorite gauze pads in the world.
That's exactly what I want, is a blood soaker. So yeah, it's like you said, it's somebody's vested some type of energy into a thought process, and they're unwilling to let it go. And they will argue with whomever they feel like they're right. It's sad, but that the tampons, again, I feel like I can bow out of that fight. There's enough people, when I go to comment, there's already two dozen comments on what you're an idiot for keeping tampons. But the amputated limb with no tourniquet, there's still some people who have some valid credentials who are still like, well, you're kind of right. I'm like, no, you're not. You put a tourniquet on it. Like, that's exactly what a tourniquet's for, is for that amputated limb. Because it will initially, it may not bleed initially, but as soon as that person loses just enough blood or things change in their body, acidosis, things like that, and all of a sudden they vasodilate, they're going to bleed a lot. And if you don't have a tourniquet in place already, they're going to lose blood, which we all know is not the goal. So keep as much of that stuff in there as you can. And there's no reason not to put a tourniquet on it. You've got plenty of them. If you're unless you're out stuck somewhere where you have one tourniquet for a whole group and everybody loses a limb and I have to decide who gets a tourniquet, there's no reason not to put one on there.
So, that's a shitty day.
Yeah, exactly right. You should hang out with better friends if that's the kind of day that happens.
So here's a comment from one of our listeners that you're going to enjoy, Kevin. I feel like a hard dick in the hole would be as effective as a tampon and more fun, too.
You know what? There's a lot of truth to that. To both of those facts. I would rather put maybe not my hard dick.
Maybe the new guy's hard dick. Anyway, hey, new guy, get over here.
But it would be more effective than a tampon, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, it'd be a lot cooler story. Story.
Oh, yeah. So there I was, no med kit in sight.
But if no pictures, it didn't happen. So it doesn't end up on social media. It didn't happen. So take your picture.
I think one thing is because I'm about to ask you about evidence-based medicine, but as we get into that, I think it's really important to establish what credentials means, right? Like sometimes people will say, well, my wife is a nurse or my cousin is a doctor or something like that. And so they said this and that's why I'm going to do that. And it's like, okay, being a nurse, being a doctor, being a paramedic, even being a combat medic, even being an 18 Delta combat medic, right? Even being any of those types of things is still going to put you in certain circumstances. And within the context of those certain circumstances, assuming you have enough repeatable evidence that what you did or how you acted worked, for if it's only coming from one person, it's anecdotal at best.
So, right. So people got to understand that. And maybe if you're not in the medical field, I was kind of raised in the medical field. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a hospital administrator. I've been doing this. I've been an EMT or medic for 21 years. I'm married a doctor. So I just kind of, I've grown up to this. But people don't understand.
Hey, Kevin, you got kind of muffled there.
Sorry.
There you go.
So I don't think people understand that just because you're a nurse or just because you're a doctor, my wife's a physician. She does not know trauma medicine. She's internal medicine and pediatrics. So I had to teach her about tourniquets. Mm-hmm. So just because you go to, they don't teach this stuff in medical school. You know, unless you're a trauma surgeon or you're an emergency medicine doctor, you're not an expert in emergency medicine. Just because you're a nurse, definitely because you're a nurse, doesn't mean that you're an expert in trauma or emergency medicine. There are plenty of nurses who have never been in an emergency room, who've never dealt with an emergency before. So just because you're in the medical field doesn't mean you're an expert in medicine. And just even if you're a physician, unless you're specialty, that's why we have doctors with specialties, they don't know everything. You can't know everything. So unless I'm speaking with a trauma surgeon, emergency medicine physician, somebody with specific expertise in that specific topic, what they're saying is based on their experience with that scenario. And not, you know, like I said, my wife has no idea how to respond to an emergency outside the hospital. None. I had to teach her tourniquets. I had to teach her wound packing. Talk about chest seals. These are all things. She's like, we don't talk about this stuff in medical school. There's not enough time. You know, we don't do this. This is what the paramedics and EMTs do. So you have to look at, you know, not just the education of somebody, but their experience, where they've been, what they've done, kind of patients they've dealt with. So just because somebody claims to be whatever, it doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. So I know I've met plenty of 18 Deltas who don't know. If you were an 18 Delta in 1989 and you got out and you haven't done anything since then, I don't care what you were taught in 1989. It doesn't apply to what I'm doing right now. So,
well, it's that evolution of medicine and kind of getting into that, you know, talking about the term that we now utilize, which is EBM or evidence-based medicine, which is really what we're trying to focus everything on. And that's why this, you know, this shithead over at freaking the Rath Tourniquet guy. What's his name again? Is it
Jeff Kirkham? Or
Jeff Kirkham. Jeff? That is it. Yep, Jeff Kirkham. Yeah, I mean, I don't mind saying his name. He's an asshole. So if that freaking guy, now he's out there making this freaking website, evidencebasedmedicine.com and everything, that's trying to discredit actual evidence-based medicine to try to support his product that is not evidence-based medicine, it's easy for people to get confused, right? So yes. When you think of evidence-based medicine, and especially since you are not only working in the field and fire EMS, but also teaching this stuff, especially from the TCCC perspective, what do you think of? When I say evidence-based medicine, what are you like, this is only what I will accept as evidence-based medicine?
So it's gotta be peer reviewed. It's gotta be reviewed. So, you know, anybody could put a study out that says A, B, or C, but does what they're saying make sense based off what you know or what people who are experts know about the specific topic, and then did other experts in the field review that medicine, review that research, and say, yeah, okay, I agree, based off your parameters, the way you did your study, I agree with your conclusions. And so if it's not supported by the peer community, then I don't think it can be considered evidence-based. And a lot of things can be, you can get a lot of results in a clinical environment or in a research environment that then don't translate to the real world. So I guess the rats would be a good example of that. You know, I can do a study where I get success with the rats. Believe it or not, if I apply the rats properly, it will occlude an artery.
Sure.
If done properly. It won't do it better than a cat tourniquet, and we know that based off the evidence-based medicine. Not only in a clinical setting did it prove to be slower than the cat tourniquet, but in the field. We put that in the end user's hands and we say, okay, medic, here are two tourniquets. Go out and do your thing and compare the two. Or we put them in some type of randomized trial setting where they're in the field where people can kind of differentiate between the two and use them both and compare them in the field, in the end user's hands, you may get a different result. And so if the evidence of it being, of this product being used doesn't match what the research is saying, then it's not a valid study, if that makes any of that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So just like evidence in a courtroom, the evidence are the facts of the case. All right, so I can't prove innocence or guilt unless we have good evidence proving that something happened. The same thing is in medicine. All right, so we'll put things in the field to use in a study once the research has been done, and we say in a laboratory setting or a clinical setting that seems to work. We put it out in the field, and after 15, 16, 17 years, we can say the cat tourniquet works. All right, we've been using it in the field. Not only do we have research that backs it up from credible people, but we have in-user verification that this product works. It's been used in every conceivable environment under numerous different types of conditions by different levels of provider. We know that this product works. So that to me that's evidence that this product works.
How much evidence do you think you need? Like let's say I decide to come out with some cool new bandage, right? And I go, hey, this bandage does whatever, this better, right? And I had the appropriate credentials and I had the appropriate backing that said, yes, we've tested this, it works. How much evidence do you think, a guy like you who teaches and does the work in the field and everything, how much evidence do you need? Like you mentioned the cat, for example. I mean, hell, man, we've been using it actually almost 19 years now.
Yeah.
in the masses, right? I mean, this thing's coming up on 2 decades of use. And if we're looking at this thing that's been almost 2 decades of use, how much evidence do we really need? We don't need 2 decades of evidence. Obviously, that's like overwhelming. But how much evidence before a guy like you, who is both an end user and an instructor and a guy who's going to kind of, you know, look at everything out of the corner of his eye, right? Like, I don't know, raise an eyebrow at this. How much evidence do you need before you would actually trust a product?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it's going to have to be, I guess it depends on the frequency of use. So if I can put that product, if it's a medical product and I'm putting it in combat and we can get within a year, we can get, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 uses out of it. And we can say, hey, you know, out of this mass use of this product, we've seen good success. And understand nothing's going to work 100% of the time.
Of course.
So, you know, there are arguments like, well, the cat only works 85% of the time or whatever. Like, yeah, that's really good. You know, in the world of medicine, 85% is really good. But I don't know. I guess, it depends on the frequency of use, depends on the environment that you use it in. You can't feel the product to a very specific demographic of users and say, well, it worked for underwater deep sea divers, and so therefore it must work for everybody. It's got to be spread across kind of a large breadth of demographics of users for me to feel like it's confident. So, I mean, it's going to take a while. One of the products that's out now that's up for debate, and this is another one that I'm not sure about how it's being played out, but the new TMT tourniquet, the tactical mechanical tourniquet, I think it's a tactical medical tourniquet or something like that. So, it's being reviewed. it's in the process of being reviewed by the Committee for TCCC. It has not been voted on. It has not been approved.
Right.
There, somebody says that it has been, and I'm not sure if that was by accident or misunderstanding or deliberate. We're not 100% sure yet, but I'm not convinced on that tourniquet yet. I've got one. I've played with it. I've taught with it. I currently, right now, don't see a benefit of it over the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about the quality of the plastic in it. So I'm not saying it's not a good tourniquet, and it probably works better than some of the other knockoffs out there. Not that it's a knockoff. I don't want to say that, but some of the other products that are out there. But I'm not sold on it yet. And it's going to take a long time. I think it's going to have to be put in a lot of people's hands over several years for me to say, okay, that's something that, if given an option, I would choose it over a cat. But I definitely wouldn't do that now. That's not, like you said, the cat has an overwhelming track record of success. It has an overwhelming track record of keeping up to date. And, we've got, seven generations of it now?
Yeah.
Seven versions that are being used. So they're listening to feedback of the user. They're looking at failure points, and they adapt to that. So I don't see other tourniquets doing that. So I'm not, as far as how long does it take for me to vet a product, it's kind of just depends on what it is and what else is out there with it. You know, like if you're talking about tourniquets, to compete with a cat or soft tee wide, it's going to take probably one of those two products to come off the market for me to choose something else over those two, because I just don't see anything. I don't see any reason to pick anything other than a cat or a soft tee wide.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't given me a product out there that's has so much more benefit that I would pick one over one of those two. So
I think if you have a vacuum or a void, like before tourniquets, right?
Yeah.
When we were improvising tourniquets and then they gave us the cat. You know, I remember when we were issued cats, it was like, good God, what is this amazing thing, right? Like, this is incredible. And we didn't even care about what the evidence was behind it because it was so much better than what we had. We were ready, you know?
Yeah.
And so
if you can come out with a product like that, that will, this is so much better than the cat tourniquet, then I'm going to try it. It's worth the risk of using it over a cat, but I can't envision a product out there like that currently. Not saying it couldn't happen, but right now there's not one on the market like that.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, did you see the video of the Halo tourniquet by Zero Delta?
Is that the... Yes, I did.
The SHOT Show?
Yeah, so they actually released that at SHOT Show, and... It
went away pretty quick.
So at SHOT Show, I mean, literally the day they'd released it, we were at a dinner with some guys, and we were all super loud about how much we thought it was a piece of shit. And we were standing at the Circle Bar there in the Venetian, and we were all being very loud about it. And it turned out one of the Zero Delta guys was standing in our group, and I had no idea. And it was like a bunch of us who are definitely people who are kind of respecting the community. And we were like,
I was there for that.
Yeah, you were. I don't know if you know some of the drama that was happening while you were there, but
lit.
And me, you know, and especially if you get me in public and around the Circle Bar, I'm like, this thing's a piece of shit. And I'm just like going off about it. Where the hell are these guys coming from releasing a product with no freaking tests, no background, whatever. And basically my reaction and the other couple guys I was with was literally the identical reaction that essentially the entire medical community had to that piece of equipment.
I mean, that's what you should expect. At this point in the game, if this was 15 years ago, you could probably get away with dropping something like that.
Yeah.
But nowadays, there's no way. There's no way you think that you're going to be able to drop a product on social media at SHOT Show with people who are so familiar with good products that they're like, you know what, that looks like a good thing. Let me try that out for cops. It's specially designed to work great for law enforcement. No, it's, come on. So if they're butthurt about it, that's their problem. I shouldn't have put out a butthurt product. I mean, it was gone. I didn't really have time to even respond to it. I was like, wow, this is, again, they don't need me to comment on this. There's plenty of people out there telling them what's what on this, but
Well, I think too, the people are getting the average consumer is worn out on listening to you know, the person that developed it, you know, because their whole thing was like, well, this was built by an 18 Delta, right? And for those listening who don't know what an 18 Delta is, an 18 Delta is an Army Special Forces medic, right? Part of the 18 series of MOSs. And so when we say, you know, when someone, again, 15 or 20 years ago, when someone was like an 18 Delta, we were all like, ooh, Special Forces. But it's been long enough now with so many guys going through group, so many guys going through the SOCOM, you know, environments, and then so many guys coming out and then promoting this and starting a t-shirt company, having a rifle coffee company, and having all these different things where it's like, dude, we get it. You sell shit now. That's what you fucking do. And you're using your background to sell shit. That's all you're doing here. And they weren't like, hey, I was an 18 Delta and then I got out and became a doctor, or I became a paramedic, or hey, I've also been working in EMS, or I've been working side by side with Comedia TCCC on this, or, you know, yeah, we were in development of this product for, you know, 5 years, and we tested it across, you know, we have 150,000, you know, case studies on this particular product and how it was carried and when it was applied and it was used in this type of environment. We found it's UV resistant, resistant to salt water, and all this kind of stuff. Everyone's getting worn out on not having that.
Yeah.
I think everyone's getting worn out on just a product coming out where they're like, we created a new AR-15 magazine. It looks just like the old AR-15 magazines. Yeah. But a Navy SEAL designed it. And everyone's like, who gives a shit? And 20 years ago, you could get away with that. Like you said, 20 years ago, before social media, before we had so many products, before we had the global war on terror and everything else, if a Navy SEAL came out and said, I developed this new magazine, everyone would be like, oh my God, give me 10. But right now, nobody wants anything. I think people are really getting worn out on that whole ride the resume thing. And that's certainly what I think the Halo Tourniquet was a huge thing with that.
I think we've got plenty of products out there to fit that March algorithm. I think people need to be coming out with new ways to teach, coming out with new ways to vet instructors. I don't need another tourniquet. I've got some. I've got them and they work. So I'm not going to get rid of my good tourniquets to buy your newfangled stuff. And I feel sorry that you spent a bunch of money developing and advertising a product that was doomed to fail. I mean, if you come at me with no evidence that it works and nothing new to offer me, I'm not going to buy it. I don't need it. I've got things that work. And so I think people are just tired of hearing new products. I don't think you can make money off a new tourniquet unless something we develop, some type of something in medicine changes where we realize that what we've been doing is wrong, and then somebody can capitalize on that change in the human body, then we're not going to see a whole lot of change in the products that we have. We spent the last 10 or 15 years really working hard developing good products. There are reputable companies that are far ahead of any new companies coming out with products on development. If there's going to be a new product come out that works, it's going to come from a company that's already doing it.
Yeah.
It's going to be North American Rescue. It's going to be TACNET Solutions, Halo, H&H, somebody like that who's been in this game for a long enough time, who's had a product that had shortcomings, and they've just made a better something else that they've already got. You're not going to have some crazy company come out of nowhere saying, hey, I know all you guys have been doing this for decades, but we're new, and we've discovered something that you didn't know. But that's not going to happen. So
a question that came across our Facebook video is, what would a new tourniquet have to do? I think, for me personally, a new tourniquet would have to be able to auto-tighten. So you'd have to put it on, and you'd be able to push a button. And
it would have to be self-application.
Exactly. It would literally have to be able to auto-tighten with a sensor built into it that said, okay, let's not go so tight that we amputate this bad boy, but let's be tight enough that we can successfully kill the pulse. But there would be another thing that it would do, maybe two more things that it would do. The second thing that it would do is it would go ahead and inject me with the appropriate dose of Special K.
All right.
Right? I want some ketamine flowing through my body. The third thing it's going to do...
It's either a handy or a blowjob.
No, it's going to start playing T-Swift. It's got a little built-in speaker. That's my blood pressure appropriation music right there. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So you want to be on ketamine, listen to
T-Swift with an auto-tightening tourniquet. You get me that. Listen up, North American Rescue. You get me that. I will get rid of all my cats. And you can charge...
just give me one that gives me ketamine. I'll trade it in. Y'all know Jeff ketamine. I'll try that one out.
I don't want Special K if I'm getting it from a tourniquet. I want some Coke.
So what do you think it would have to do, man?
No, that's so yeah. If we could have something that could so the big problem with tourniquets is pressure.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly how much pressure. Everybody's a little bit different depending on size and muscle mass and all that kind of stuff. We don't know how much pressure is enough versus too much. So if we could have a way to monitor and regulate that, I think that would be advantageous to the next level of care. So as a first responder or even a layperson providing point of injury care, my goal is just stop the bleeding. I'm not really thinking about pressures, especially if I'm a layperson. I'm not really thinking about pressures. If I'm a first responder, I'm thinking about it, but it's an afterthought. Mm-hmm. But when I'm the surgeon or I'm the patient who has to deal with that after effects, pressures are a big deal. So if I could have a tourniquet that could monitor and give me just the right amount of pressure where I'm not causing nerve damage, tissue damage, but I'm occluding the artery. Also, something that lets me know, like, hey, this artery, this blood vessel has been occluded. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to try to assess for a pulse in a limb that's already damaged in a cold environment where I'm not feeling good pulses anyway. It's difficult to assess distal pulses after tourniquet if you're outside, if you're wet, if you're cold. So something that can say, hey, yes, you've occluded the artery. We have zero blood flow past this tourniquet. But then we get into, you know, what's that cost? And who can carry that? So you give me all that in a $30 package, and then I'll trade in. But I'll tell you, the people that are going to give you that are going to be the people making the cat or the soft and wide. It's not going to be zero data or zero delta.
Zero delta. Who previous to coming out with a tourniquet made scope mounts.
Yeah.
So, probably stick to what you're good at.
Yeah, you probably stay in your lane. That's probably another thing
you
got to do.
Totally natural progression. We made really shitty scope mounts, so we should try to make really shitty tourniquets.
Kind of switch gears a little bit for the last couple minutes that we have you, Kevin. Top five things that you definitely keep in every trauma kit you have. Top five things. All
right, so my number one thing, if I can't carry anything, I usually carry some type of trauma dressing. And carrying a tourniquet's easy. I carry a tourniquet a lot. I carry a soft TY, flat folded. It's easy. But it's such a narrow lane it's just a narrow margin of patients I'm going to use that tourniquet on.
Mm.
You know, in the civilian world, extremity injury isn't at the top of the list like it is in combat. So I find it's a little bit more advantageous for me to carry some type of pressure dressing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I carry just a small, North American makes I think it's a 3-inch or 4-inch ETD civilian trauma dressing. It's the same thing as all their combat ones. It's just in a gray package versus a green, $5. So that's probably number one. Two, definitely a tourniquet of some type, cat or soft T-wide. Gloves, you know, I've got other people in my life to think about. I don't need to bring hepatitis or whatever home with me.
Mm-hmm.
So even in a layperson setting, unless I'm dealing with my family, my immediate family, not my aunts and uncles because they're dope heads, I'm putting on gloves or some type of protective barrier. So when I leave the house, I have a pair of gloves on me. They're usually wrapped up in my tourniquet, the rubber band on my tourniquet.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm super high speed that day, I'm carrying everything in an ankle kit. I use a Frog Pro SFD responder. I'm not affiliated with them at all. I chose that over the Riker ankle kit just because it's a little bit more comfortable for me. But the ankle kit, I was kind of, at first, you guys used to push them. You still do push them a lot.
We do.
At first, I was like, I'm not wearing some gay ankle kit. Like, that's so gay. I'm not doing it. And then I got one, and I was like, this thing is badass.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And you can't see it, and I forget it's there, and I was like, this is, all right, so.
Everyone thinks it's ridiculous until they wear one, and they're like, this is the most amazing idea ever, yeah.
Yeah, and so for me, the most comfortable one I found is this SFB responder. It's pretty comfy. I carry a chest seal. You can create a chest seal. It's not hard to do, but it's easier to keep a commercial. I use Hyphen. And then, outside of that, if I'm not going to walk on loss of anything other than one or two things, it's a...
You want to say that last part again? We lost you for a second. If you're not going to what?
If I'm going to walk out of the house with nothing else, I got to have a light on me. even professionally on the job, like if I'm get up in the middle of the night and we're going on a medical call, I'm grabbing a flashlight because I can't do anything. Even in the daytime, most of the time I have to use a flashlight to assess a patient. You know, if I'm in a house with no lights or I'm in a car or something, I've got to have some type of light. And I've got to have a way to cut their clothing off. So I usually just keep a pocket knife on me. It's not ideal to cut away clothing with just a regular pocket knife. You run the risk of stabbing somebody. But there's been so many times where I'm like, shit, I don't have scissors. I don't have a knife. I got to borrow a knife or a scissor from somebody to reveal an injury or something like that. So if you're going to put a kit together, a light, some way to cut clothing or something off, and a way to control bleeding, whether it's you choose a tourniquet, that's great, or some type of pressure dressing that has a little bit more versatility than that. So that's what I carry every day, and on like an EDC level.
Yeah.
And then I keep a fully stocked bag in the truck.
Right.
I use like North American's like warrant bag, I think it is.
Yeah.
High risk warrant bag, and I just got it empty, and I just filled it full of basically what I would want on a mass casualty. So I got like four or five tourniquets, a bunch of pressure dressings. I really, really am a fan of the TacMed Solutions Elias dressing.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. That's a good dressing.
It's a nice to have. You know, I think they're like $6 or $8. Everything in there you could recreate, or you could have other places, but it's nice to have it all in one package.
Mm.
And now they sell it flat folded, so it's pretty small, like a 4-inch flat folded Elias, and that's I got chest seal material, I've got packing material, I've got pressure wrap, you know, it's kind of all. So I got a bunch of those in there. I've got some cats, I got scissors, I've got some webbing to use to move people around. I'm big on, and you guys preach it a lot. I tell everybody, if nothing else, you know, I've got education, I've got knowledge. I know how tourniquets work. I know how pressure dressings work. If I need to, I could create something. And I feel educated enough that I could create something decent. It's not going to be as good as a commercial product, but, you know, if I don't have the money to buy a bunch of gear, even if I did, I would get the training first. You know, training trumps tools all day long. So it's a no brainer. If I got to pick, I tell people all the time, like, before you go buy a kit, go take a class from a good instructor and then buy something from them. If they're good, if it's a good course, they're going to have things there that they recommend or that they've let you use, and buy something from them. Don't go just buy a bunch of stuff and then go take a class, because you're probably going to throw all that stuff away.
Right. Or wish you hadn't spent money on some stuff that, and that, honestly, man, that goes not just for medical training, but any kind of training. I mean, people come to firearms classes, anything. It's like, dude, don't buy a bunch of crap to go to a class. Go to a class and then figure out what you actually need. And most of the time, you'll save yourself a lot of headache and a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll show up. The one thing we try to do is put things in people's hands that they might, you know, have an option to buy. So we'll give them all the tourniquets. I'll give them RATS tourniquets, CATS, soft tees, SWAT tees. I play with it and see what you think about it, and then you decide what you want to buy. If you want to buy a RATS tourniquet after comparing it to a CAT tourniquet, that's your option. I'm not going to tell you not to buy a RATS tourniquet, but not give you one to use. This is why I don't like it. And I give it to them to play with it, and they're like, yeah, you're right, that thing sucks. Or here are two different types of pressure dressings, or three different types. You know, open them up, see what they look like. You know, use them, play with them, yeah, and then when you're done. If you want some, I've got some here I can sell you, or here's where you go and get them online.
Oh my God. So. Well, see, I'm like that except for one regard. I will absolutely tell people not to buy a RATS tourniquet.
I will. I mean, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, if you buy it, that's silly. You're stupid. But, you know, I'm not going to sell it to you. And now, I guess, on a side note, I guess now they're restricting who their vendors can sell to online. I guess they don't like certain.
Correct. Yeah. So actually, our primary distributor, the Tactical Medic, actually just, he was telling me about it several months ago, and then he just put a post up on all his social media stuff saying, hey, I'm not even going to sell this thing anymore, not just based on principle, but also on the fact that they're trying to control how I can sell it and who I can sell it through, and that's just ridiculous.
Yep.
So they're trying to control their bad press.
Yeah.
And you know, when you have a shit product, it's hard to control bad press.
So, right on, dude. Well, we got to let you go. As much as I hate to do that, because we could just talk about this stuff all day, I know. But
yeah.
But how are the ways that people can get a hold of you? You know, we have listeners all over the freaking country, and so often people are asking us, hey, man, where do I go for good training? You're going to be in the Memphis area soon, which is great, because we definitely have some clients over there that will be happy about that. Where can people go to find you?
My main source is Instagram, so Prepared Med, on Instagram. Same thing on Facebook, Prepared Medical Response is the company. The website is www.preparedmed.com.
Okay.
You can email me through there. You can DM me through Instagram or through Facebook. I think on Facebook there may be a phone number, or maybe on the website. Feel free to call me. I'm not that big. I'm not so big that you can't call me. A lot of people email me with questions, and I just call them back because it's easier to talk on the phone than it is to email.
Right.
I've got our next course is the end of April. They're at Tees. We've got a 3-day TACMED course that's designed for SWAT entry, but it's open to anybody. So designed for LEOs doing, you know, kind of house CQB type stuff, but it's open to anybody interested.
And that's there in Memphis, right? T's facility is actually just outside of Memphis, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in their core. Their training center is in Vihelia, Mississippi, which is like 20 minutes outside of Memphis.
Yeah.
And then I've got like some courses for the Tennessee Firemen's Association at the end of May, their annual conference. We're doing a couple of TECC intro courses. But yeah, if people are interested, just hit me up and say, hey, man, I'm in this area. When's the next class? And I'll either invite you to one that I've already got on the books, or we can get one in your area. So, So, and I still do some stuff here around Nashville. So I go back and forth. So I'm still working in Middle Tennessee as well. But yeah, wherever.
Right on, man. Well, thank you. You know, thanks for all the support you've given us over the years. You know, on the show, and we always kind of bounce things back and forth and talk quite a bit. And so we're always happy to have you as a guest on the show and get your opinion and your knowledge and your experience, because that's important for us and also important for all of our listeners to get that kind of well-vetted, you know, well-educated decision, and not just kind of someone who's like, oh, I'm a fireman and I know this stuff. It goes way deeper than that, and we really appreciate that, man.
Yeah, well, I enjoy the show always. I enjoy your rants, so I like to be a part of that. I find myself ranting with you, so I'm like, man, I just need to be on the show. So that's when I usually hit you up. I'm like, man, put me on the show. I got stuff to say.
I got some shit to talk about. I like it. Right on, dude. Well, we got to let you go. Thanks again, man, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy that move down to Memphis.
I'll do my best. Appreciate it, guys.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks. Bye.
Good old Memphis. All right. So make sure you check out Kevin over at Prepared Medical, Prepared Medical Response on Instagram and Facebook and preparedmed.com. He is a really excellent instructor and a wealth of knowledge. So make sure you check him out and give him a follow on the social media. He posts a lot of really good, useful stuff, a lot of good information. Remember, if you want to bring us out to train with you, you can email us info@trainingaz.com or hit us up on Patreon or Instagram or Facebook or however you want to, and we'll send you over the information about how to host us in your area. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear.
Woo!
We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Check out the other shows that the network has, a whole bunch of them. You just go straight to their website and find out all the shows that they have. And my favorite show on there, of course, other than ours, is Adam Bird is the network owner. And he actually just brought on a co-host recently, if you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, female co-host.
Adam.
But his show, The Decision Hour, is a phenomenal show. I really like listening to it. I don't listen to every episode, but I definitely listen from time to time because I just enjoy listening to that point in time where people had to make a choice in their professional or even personal lives to kind of shit or get off the pot. And so it's actually a pretty good show. All right, next week, we're going to be talking about speed and accuracy. Is slow really fast? Right? Ooh. Is it actually fast? So we'll find out. We'll find out. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.